Hello, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the interim editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and I'm here with Christine Maffa.
I'm the clinical editor at AJN.
And we're also here today with Ann Woods, who's AJN's publisher and also the chief nurse of Lippincott Williams & Wilkins and Ovid Technologies. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you for having me here today, ladies.
Yes, we pulled Ann in this time, so you won't be bored just by Christine and my voices as you are every month. So we're here to talk about the June issue. We have a great cover. The cover is a morph of two photos, actually. One from 1898 from nurses at Harper Hospital in Detroit, the graduating class there. And the other part of the photo is the 2011 graduating class from Ramapo College School of Nursing at Englewood Hospital in Englewood, New Jersey. And it ties in with the editorial I wrote called Don't Call Us, We'll Call You. And basically it talks about the similarities that both graduating classes face, and that is that it's very difficult to get jobs today in hospitals because of the economy and a variety of other reasons. So we're very happy with the cover. We think it really is just such a nice combination of the old and the new, but with the same problem.
Well, I have to tell you, Sean, I do work as a nurse practitioner on the weekends in acute care, and we've had quite a bit of students coming through my hospital system. And one of their biggest issues is that they're really afraid they're not going to be able to find positions when they graduate, and a lot of them have not yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that your editorial is right on time to really address this current issue.
Yeah, it is a problem, and one of the issues, as I mentioned the editorial, one of my colleagues said that one of her students got a job in a nursing home, but she's the only nurse on the evening shift, and she's scared to death because she hasn't really been out working. So it makes you wonder about the stress we're putting on these young graduates and if that's going to drive them out of nursing sooner than they might.
Yeah. So. In 1995, when I graduated, it was very difficult to find a job as a new graduate. Everybody wanted nurses that had at least 1 year experience, and I ended up having to move from New York to Miami to be able to get my first job, but it took me a year. So I was actually out of school for a whole year. My skills got a little bit rusty, and it was difficult. It was very frustrating. And that was all because of the re-engineering and restructuring that was going on at the time, which didn't get hospitals very far in the end.
No, it did not, because I was working at that time, and we saw what was happening in the hospitals is they weren't hiring, and they were downsizing or right-sizing or whatever they were calling it at the time. So I hope things settle down pretty quickly. The projections are that it will, that the economy, as the economy improves, and they're hoping that through this next year it will continue to improve, and that then there'll be more openings in hospitals for nurses. So we'll certainly be watching and reporting on that. So Christine, why don't you start with what our lineup is this month?
Well, our CE feature is original research on rapid response teams seen through the eyes of the nurse. This is a qualitative study. So there's been a lot of studies done on rapid response teams recently, and it's mostly how the patient outcomes, focusing on patient outcomes, do we have shorter length of stays, decreased mortality, et cetera. This looks at nurses' point of view and how do they feel about having these teams in place and job satisfaction. And Ann, you have rapid response teams at the hospital you work at?
Yeah, we actually do. And actually, the nurse practitioner group at the hospital actually runs all the rapid response teams. And what we have found from the nurse point of view is that they are very, very comfortable with us coming out and running the rapid response. They feel that they can call the rapid response at any time. And actually, we've seen a big difference in our length of stay, our transfers into the ICU, and overall outcomes for our patients. So for our hospital, it has been very, very successful.
Yeah, that's great. And there's I did a podcast interview with Polly Pittman, one of the authors. And I'm sorry, it's not Polly Pittman. She's the author of the next article. Susan Shapiro, who's one of the authors of the Rapid Response Team article. And Susan mentioned how that was the biggest issue, was that nurses need to feel that they can call the team and that they won't be reprimanded if perhaps the patient wasn't as in dire straits as they thought they were. And that was a big issue, that the nurse's perception of that their judgment was validated. So it's a great article to read. And I think it lends support for rapid response teams, even where some of the more quantitative research on outcomes may not. So I think it's a really good study. The other original research piece we have in June, that one is written by Polly Pittman from Academy Health. And that's she did a study on U.S.-based recruitment of foreign educated nurses, the implications of an emerging industry. And it's really an in-depth look at the recruitment industry, which has mushroomed in the last decade. And very little is known about the business model for the industry or the recruitment practices. And this article really does a nice job of summarizing it. She also, as part of the her research, did focus groups interviews with several foreign educated nurses. And many of them talked about problems they had or what they felt were abusive practices. Her conclusion after interviewing both the owners of these recruitment agencies as well as the nurses and some of the hospital execs is that there does need to be a better accountability within the industry for what happens to these nurses and the recruitment practices that get them here. So that's as the shortage will ease in the next year or so, the feeling is that there's going to be a big hole that foreign educated nurses will be filling, and the recruiters are all anticipating a big influx. There are many nurses who have visas to come in but are on hold because of the limit placed, and they're expecting that will change quickly by the end of 2011. So this is an important article, I think, so that people need to understand the issues around the recruitment practices as well as what happens to the foreign educated nurse. And there is a podcast, as I said, with Polly Pittman discussing some background on that.
And then we have the next installment of our Uniting States and Sharing Strategies.
Right. This is the series that's sponsored by the Center to Champion Nursing in America at AARP. It was funded by Robert Wood Johnson, and the other partners include the U.S. Department of Labor's Employment and Training Administration and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration. And this is the series that has been looking at innovative ways to expand capacity in nursing education. How are we going to grow our own faculty? This particular article focuses on Hawaii's innovative strategies. They've been isolated by geography, so they've always had to kind of do their own thing and worry about their own workforce. There's a lot that other states can learn from Hawaii's efforts. So we'll have one more which focuses on Mississippi's efforts, and that'll be in July. So we're almost done with the series, but it will be available as a collection as we go forward.
All right, and then we have a Cultivating Quality article, and it also falls under our Diabetes Under Control. It's actually a hybrid. It's about a quality improvement project that took place at a hospital that instituted using the hemoglobin A1C for their patients coming in for surgery. And did you have an experience with that?
Yeah, actually I do. The hospital where we work, we currently have the electronic healthcare record and CPOE, and one of the things that we instituted a couple years ago was that on every patient that comes in who has a history of diabetes, we automatically have an order set that pops up that makes you do an A1C on the patient. And we found this to be very, very helpful. In the past, you would rely on fasting blood sugars and AccuChecks, and you really didn't have a good idea of how the patient was doing overall for the past mm-hmm. few months. So by implementing the A1C test on all their patients, we've really been able to improve outcomes with getting glycemic control in our patients, and especially with our post-op patients, who this is so important that you maintain, you know, as normal as you can glycemic index for them. So absolutely, I think I'm really looking forward to reading this article, and I think it'll be very helpful to all the nurses in practice right now.
I didn't realize that it was such a new practice, because on outpatients, I think they've been more into doing this in the outpatient diabetes clinics and nurse practitioner and physician clinics. But it's relatively new that's being adapted in hospitals.
It is in acute care. In the last few years, you've really seen a push in acute care. I have to say, in the past, up to probably about 4 or 5 years ago, we really just looked at, you know, as I said, the fasting blood glucose levels, as well as AccuCheck readings, and we didn't really look at this, and it was really a shame because patients were suffering from that. So now, you know, the standard of care is to take a look at the A1Cs on all the patients and really help them to receive or to achieve a normal glycemic control level.
That's interesting. So, and we have one other topic, Christine. This is up your alley.
Yes, as a former women's health nurse, our Sexually Speaking column, we have the whole truth about IUDs. Back in the 70s, IUDs got a bad reputation because of the Delcon shield causing a lot of complications. But now we have, there's two brands that are on the market, the Paragard and the Mirena. They both offer different pros and cons. And physicians were still weary about prescribing these, and it's unfounded. So this article breaks the myths behind the fear of IUDs.
And of course we have Reflections in Art of Nursing and News and AJN Reports. So there's also two podcasts, which we mentioned already. So we hope you will check out the issue, check it out online, as well as our blog, ajnoffthecharts.com.
And our Facebook fan page.
Right, and Twitter. Where are we up to? We have like 5,000 fans or followers?
On Facebook, we have about 5,300 and climbing.
Yep. So check out both sites, and we hope to hear from you. My email is sean.kennedy@walterskluwer.com.
And I'm Christine.Maffa@WaltersKluwer.com.
So drop us a line if you see something, hear something, or feel that we're missing something, and let us know what we should be addressing to meet your needs. So thanks for listening, and Anne, thanks for being our special guest.
Well, thank you for having me today, and I certainly hope to participate in future sessions as well. Thank you.
Great, thanks.